Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Hi, that's a loaded question. I turn 49 tomorrow, so yeah, I'm still alive, and that's going to have to do.
I mean, that's, I'm sure as many of our listeners would agree, is better than some of the alternatives sometimes, and well, I'm happy that you're still here. But we're going to be talking about things that are also kind of dead, but not really, because things are weird. We're going to be talking about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment, and I'm going to go ahead and say up front, there's probably going to be a lot of talk about Shadowlands, because we still have a lot of questions to get through from you, our wonderful listeners. If you do have questions for us, whether it's this podcast, the other podcast, or the queue, be sure to send them in. We do have several Discord channels dedicated specifically to asking these questions. As a matter of fact, most of these questions actually do come from our Discord, so thank you very much. We do have one set aside for our patrons to sort of reward them as being sponsors of our wonderful products here. So if you are a patron, we have one set aside for you, and we try to go to those first, but we want to make sure that everybody else gets a chance as well. And if Discord isn't your thing, you can send those questions in to our email address at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. If you have sent up anything in there, I apologize. We haven't gotten to them yet, just simply because we've actually been quite fortunate and have quite a number of questions from you. So thank you very much for sending those in. And thank you very much for your continued support. So we're going to go ahead and kick things off right here. So hello, Rage Meter Rossi and Totem Placer Perez, Skardashian, Orc Warrior from Grizzly Hills, and Patreon supporter. Well, thank you very much, Skardashian. I'm leveling through Mount Hyjal, where the ancients are returning. During questing, Ysera says, "The rift that weakens the boundaries of this world has hastened the return of powerful allies." Later on, Tarek Ragehowl states that the ancient Logosh appeared on both Azeroth and Draenor in many forms. This reminds me of a loon appearing on different worlds. Two questions. What rift does Ysera speak of? How does the return of these powerful allies relate to what we've learned about the Anima and Loa regeneration in Shadowlands? Or is this something entirely different? Does this give any clues as to when the machinery of death, quote-unquote, broke?
It does not give clues to that. People really got to stop asking that question. We don't know anything other than what we've already talked about, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we don't have a time reference yet. We now know kind of what happened, but we don't know when it happened.
And plus, with the time in the Shadowlands being the way it is, that it's almost useless to speculate, because 5 years from our perspective could be 50,000 from theirs. They don't measure time the same way. I will say this, the rift that's being talked about there.
There's another part of the question.
But let me answer the rift part. The rift that Ysera is speaking of is the one that Deathwing ripped when he tore up from Deepholm and into Azeroth. Does that have anything to do with what's currently going on with the Shadowlands? I don't know. I do suspect that it probably did weaken the barrier between Ardenweald and the Shadowlands. I mean, and the Emerald Dream, but I don't know why it would have. Keep in mind that the various elemental planes were created by the Titans, specifically by Highkeeper Ra and our old friend and current foe, Helya. They're the ones that made those four elemental realms. So what Deathwing did when he punched through might have had an effect on the entire setup that they put in place. And we're starting to learn a lot about the Emerald Dream seems to predate the Titans.
Yeah.
But we know that the Titans did something to it, specifically Freya. And it's quite possible that it's whatever it's related to whatever Freya did to the Emerald Dream that is connected to what Deathwing did here. Because we also saw that the old gods were attacking the Emerald Dream. In Legion, we got to see the fallout from that.
I still have the Void Rose in my bag from that, because why not?
And we saw Ysera involved in that. Ysera, the shade of Ysera or reflection of Ysera. And spoilers for Shadowlands, but Ysera comes back in Ardenweald as a... I don't know how you would put what exactly happens to her. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want to talk about something else?
So let's talk a little bit about it, because as I've picked Ardenweald as my covenant, I've actually literally just got through some extra stuff today that gives me a little more insight into it, which if players out there have already done this, I apologize if I'm telling you old news, but for those of you that didn't choose Ardenweald or are still going through your upgrades for your covenant, this might be some new news for you. So one of the things that I found very, very interesting about how Ardenweald works is that there are two different ways, apparently, that things are brought back to life. There is it's the Grove of Awakening, and this one seems specifically for those souls that are going to be awoken inside of Ardenweald to stay in Ardenweald. And this is important because this is where we take Ysera's seed. So as you're doing the questing, you're told that there's this one wild seed that's been saved, struggling with nightmares and everything that's happening. And we find out throughout this questing that it is Ysera. We help her deal with her nightmares, which involve murdering her friends over and over again. So the whole Temple of Alun battle in Azuna, or Valshara, excuse me. Her succumbing to the nightmare, all of the things that involved Xavius and all that stuff, all of those things you deal with and bring her peace. And you actually beg the Fairy Queen, basically the Winter Queen, to bring her back. And not just you, but every single member of the court, every Droman, every important fairy, even the members of the Wild Hunt who you've helped out through this entire time, all of them are saying, no, you're going to bring this seed back to life. And the Queen's response is, okay, well, we're going to bring her back to life, but they bring her back to the Grove of Resurrection or Grove of Awakening, where she is awoken and her eyes turn to the blue of the fairies. She's now part of Ardenweald. And this is something that they make very, very clear. It's not that she, can go back. She's not reborn in a way that she can go back to Azeroth, which is very fascinating, but she's stuck to serve the Grove now. Now there is another section that is the Queen's Conservatory. And it's one of the items that are one of the places that you can actually unlock if you choose the Covenant. And as you do this, you actually nurture wild seeds. You put souls into wild seeds to resurrect them and send them back to their world. Now, in-game mechanically, it's just to give you extra bonuses, whether it's consumables or it's very similar to like garrisons where you would, have the farm or have the mine that you could go into and get things, get crafting materials. This gives you crafting materials or anima or cosmetic things as well. But it's fascinating because there is a separate section that is not widely used, at least by the rest of the fairy court, and all of the NPCs in there are very specifically dedicated to this particular conservatory. Like, they don't go anywhere else, unlike all the other fairy court members who can basically go wherever they want, to any of the groves that they want, and travel throughout Ardenweald. It's also separated, like, its own little subplane within Ardenweald, mostly, I think, to keep it safe from outside incursion. So, like, it's almost like this floating platform in the middle of nowhere. Like, you can see Ardenweald, but, like, you can't see down. It's really well removed. But the souls you bring back, the souls that you nurture back to life, that you awaken, they emerge from the wild seeds and they look very much like the Titan Souls. They're the constellation of stars inside of the gaseous forms, and then they leave and go back to their plane. And how you're introduced to this too is fascinating as well, because one of the first things you do is the queen takes you through the ceremony of resurrection, and by doing so she's resurrecting a cloud serpent, and not just any cloud serpent, it's the cloud serpent that's hanging out in the veil, the one that you need all those
not Sulon,
the one that you need the sky shards to get at.
Okay,
so it's the red crackling lightning cloud serpent, and you're sending it back to Azeroth. Like, that's the first thing you do. It's absolutely fascinating. Now, I think that there is, going back to what Matt was saying earlier, just to sort of go back to the root of the question, I think that there is something that when Deathwing ripped through the world, that some of the barriers did weaken, because if you, during Cataclysm, the barrier between all of the elemental planes was weakened, was thinned, and I had this thing that I said maybe a month ago at this point. It was that everything seems to sort of touch Azeroth in almost like this weird balance state. That like the prime material plane seems to be this place where all these extra realms can touch to varying degrees, and Azeroth almost seems like the nexus point. So if he rips from one plane of existence to another plane of existence, that could have catastrophic effects to others, especially because in order, it's almost like a closed system, right? If you have a bunch of, you know, connected spheres, and, you know, one of those spheres breaks, what'll happen is the pressure inside of those spheres, if they're all connected, will try to balance out. And sometimes that weakens the other ones as a result. So it kind of is like this constant process of rebalancing, rebalancing, rebalancing. Well, Deathwing isn't the only one that's shattered reality in some capacity. We've had the Legion doing all sorts of weird things. We have a giant sword sticking out of Azeroth. We've seen interdimensional travel happen. Heck, that spell that Illidan used in order to basically open the wormhole to Argus, like that whole thing, all of that could have had a very profound effect on how things were balanced out. So I think there's something to that, that as these catastrophic events have been happening, that the barrier between worlds, basically realms touching the prime material, weakens because they're stretching themselves thinner to compensate for the holes that are already punched into that system. Does that make sense? This is me asking.
Are you asking me?
Yeah, this is me asking you.
How the hell would I know, man? I don't know what makes sense anymore. None of this makes sense. But basically, to answer like the other question you're asking about Lagash existing on both Azeroth and Draenor, that's a good point, and it's one that I keep coming back to as I think more about the Emerald Dream. Since we've seen Ardenweald in the Shadowlands and the Emerald Dream has been mentioned as sort of its opposite number, I'm starting to think that there's a, for lack of a better word, there's a Lifelands. There's something out there that's connected not to death, but to life and the existence of life. And we might see it at some point or we might not, but the Emerald Dream definitely seems to be part of it. And I would wonder if the sister, whoever the sister is that the Winter Queen talks about when she's resurrecting Ysera, might be there, might be in the Emerald Dream. There might be a Summer Queen, who knows?
You know, and I was thinking about that too. That would be very, very interesting and a very good way of balancing the sort of the fairy courts, because I've been wondering this since we first started getting into Shadowlands. Is there a summer court? We know the winter court, and it makes sense that the winter court is centered around death. That's very in line with sort of like that traditional mythos.
Well, it's autumnal. Yeah, it's the autumn, you know, versus the summer. But what has me thinking about it is Anima comes from the land of the living and goes into the Shadowlands when you die.
Yep.
But where does it come from? Does it come from this realm, or does it enter our realm from somewhere else? If this is all cyclical and things are returned to life from the Shadowlands, does that anima come from somewhere else? Is there a realm where anima flows from that enters into our world? I don't know the answer to that question, but it does seem to me like if we take the Emerald Dream as the opposite reflection of Ardenweald, then the Emerald Dream would basically be connected to something similar to the way Ardenweald is a Shadowland. There'd be Lifelands or Summerlands or whatever you want to call them.
So that's one thing I've been wondering too. And this is something that, especially with like the Logosh thing and knowing that the ancients can go to other places and knowing that ANR had a hand in shaping the Emerald Dream, and even looking at Legion and when the druids, when you are a druid and you can go through like the dreamways and get a glimpse of what's there and see that there is like an infinite number of pathways, it made me start wondering if maybe there is a little something more to it. Like we talked about the Titans not necessarily creating anything new, but just reshaping what was there or repurposing the Emerald Dream. I think you brought this up a few weeks ago. And since you mentioned that, it's been stuck in my head. What if the Emerald Dream isn't what we think it is, and it's not just limited to Azeroth? And what we're seeing of it, the pieces that we have seen, including the Nightmare, is just such a small subsection of it. This could simply be the realm of life that connects or touches to almost everything in the same way that the Shadowlands does, or at least a section of it. And that's been sort of sticking in my brain because it would explain why the wild gods can appear, or the ancients can appear elsewhere. Why there's, you know, places where Alun and Anar seem to be in sync with each other, but also have a very Emerald Dreamy type of vibe. Meant to be a backup. Maybe it wasn't always just specifically a backup copy of Azeroth.
Well, I think that the backup copy of Azeroth part might be the part we call the Emerald Dream.
Right.
But there's something bigger, a bigger realm of life. I don't know if you would call that realm just the Emerald Dream by itself, or if there's more to it. But I want to talk really fast about the question about ancients, wild gods, and Loa. Ancient, wild god, and the August Celestials all do seem to be basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. Loa is a more general term. There are beings that are called Loa that absolutely are the same as ancients or wild gods or August Celestials. But there's also pretty much any powerful spirit can be a Loa. Like it would be from a troll conception, the Winter Queen's a Loa.
Yeah.
The Jailer's a Loa.
Yep.
The Arbiter's a Loa, because they're all Loas to the trolls. The trolls, like, I mean, when the trolls meet wisps in Mount Hyjal, they consider those Loa. Loa or any powerful spiritual being. It's a catch-all. They use that word the same way we would use the word spirit.
Yep, they really do.
So it doesn't really answer your question, because you're asking, are they different things? Are they the same thing? Ancients and wild gods and August Celestials are all basically the same kind of thing. There's a little difference between them, and that could just be the way that they're interacted with. We don't know for sure, but they're definitely all pretty similar. And it's really interesting to look at Mount Hyjal and compare it to Zandalar Isle, because Mount Hyjal and Zandalar Isle used to be the mountain Zandalar.
Mm-hmm.
And everything on it was basically part of this mountain chain. And the reason it became a series of islands is it survived because it was higher up. Like a lot of stuff that got swallowed into the ocean, that this didn't, because it was tall enough, essentially. So it's worth considering how they were opposite poles of the same basic kind of thing. Down to they both had trolls living around them.
Mm-hmm.
And to the dark trolls who now only exist as like one troll who lives in Zandalar, to the dark trolls, all the things we call ancients or August Celestials would have been Loa. And that's how they would have interacted with them. And Alun would have been a Loa from their perspective. So Loa is a very general term.
The other thing that I think is really interesting too, when you're starting, one of the parts of the question is in terms of cosmic distribution. If you do the other side dungeon, there's some very interesting connotations in there as you go through. Yes, we get a bunch of stuff from our world, from Azeroth, as far as the encounters go. But one of the encounters is essentially touching another planet elsewhere. We don't know where it is or what it is exactly. But one of the encounters is with one of those, why can't I think of the name of them now? Brokers. Brokers aren't from Azeroth. They're not native to, at
they're
least...
They're supposedly from the Shadowlands. They say they're from a weird alternate Shadowland. No one knows what it is.
Yeah, but they seem to have, like, access to a world with other beings, which could be part of the Shadowlands. It could be one of the other things. And there's a question later on that actually asks something about this later, which we'll get to. But it's fascinating to me because that person made a deal with Bwam Samdi, that broker. So that means that the reach of Loa might be larger than we think. And what that means or what that could mean for the future, I don't know. But I think in terms of cosmic distribution, I think even there, it's just based on how powerful that particular spirit or god or ancient or Loa, whatever you want to call it, is, and what its sort of like domain of influence is as to how far it can reach or where it goes to look. Because even Moisala makes references to something beyond just Azeroth and not just the Shadowlands. It's very vague, but it is there when he's talking with Bwamsamdi and having his argument back and forth with him in the other side. So there might be more to it, and we might see more about that in the future. I'm actually kind of hoping we do, because I think now that we're in Shadowlands, it is a perfect opportunity to learn some interesting things, in particular about the ancients, the wild gods, and the Loas, and how they interact with the world of the living. So hopefully that answers your questions. Probably a little bit more than you bargained for, but hey, that's why you guys are here, isn't it? All right, our next one. Howdy, fellas. Thros Helheim, the Vision of Zetcon, was given in Shadows Rising of Sarfang the Light's treatment of Brydenbad. These are a few examples of portions of the Shadowlands and possible other afterlives we know are out there, but not available in 9.0. Also, Steve Denouser said in an interview that demons and magical creatures upon death return to their respective realms. With all this evidence and a moment of speculation, what do you think we might see in 9.1 and beyond? What realms could you speculate are waiting for us to travel through the Shadowlands? Thanks for the entertainment and inspiration. This is Kali Apali, who's also a Patreon. Our patron supporter.
Sorry to be the guy who I always am. Neither Thros nor Helheim are in the Shadowlands. For that matter, neither is the Halls of Valor. They are not in the Shadowlands. Just because a realm is someplace dead people end up doesn't mean it's in the Shadowlands. Sometimes, on purpose, it's not in the Shadowlands.
They're pocket dimensions a lot of safe. Time.
Yeah. And sometimes they are. For instance, we just talking about it. The other side is considered to be a pocket dimension in the Shadowlands. Whereas Thros is not. And that's, Joe was talking about this. I wanted to bring this up while Joe was talking about it, but I waited till we get to this point. The entire reason that the Drust are invading Ardenweald is to get to that place Joe was just talking about.
They want to get to the Grove of Rebirth. They want to get to the Conservatory.
Yeah, because they want to be reborn into our world again. Because here's the deal. The beings of Thros, the Drust, didn't just kill themselves. They ripped their own spirits out of their bodies and put them into constructs. They severed themselves from the cycle of rebirth. They made themselves dead things permanently, much the same way that the Scourge are trapped. And with them constantly inhabiting construct bodies, they don't have life, and they can never get life back. And so that's the whole thing they're trying to do. They want to hijack the cycle of resurrection and return. They want to steal it and repurpose it for their own use. Because right now, they have no way back to being living things. They can't even be reborn into the Shadowlands and take on like an animal form and do that. They're completely cut off. And that's, Thros is not a part of the Shadowlands. Thros is very deliberately a prison that imprisons them.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for the question, though, is because Thros has been referred to oftentimes
absolutely.
As a and death realm, right?
That's exactly what I'm getting at here. There are realms like Thros and Helheim that are outside of the cycle of the Arbiter.
Yeah, which is, that's what the death realm is, or at least in this particular case.
And with Thros, I really want to get into Thros more, because I absolutely think we are going to see Thros.
Go for it. I agree with you.
I think we're going to go to Thros, because what's happening with the invasion of Ardenweald, with the Drust showing up and doing all the mayhem that they're doing, they're basically attacking what they consider to be at the time of Ardenweald's weakest moment. They're taking advantage. They're not involved in what the jailer has done.
No, they're opportunists.
But they're just, okay, now is the time. They would never want to take on the Winter Queen at full power. They don't want to fight her. She'll stomp them. But right now, she cannot bring the full amount of her power to bear, because she's using so much of it to try and preserve the realm.
Yeah.
She's weakened. Now is the time that they're attacking. I definitely think we're going to see Thros. I absolutely think we're going to have to go to Thros, because that's where most of the Drust are. And absolutely, I think that's going to be something. It could be like the way we got, bloody heck, Val'Shara? Not Val'Shara. The Naga place. I can never remember the name of this.
Oh,
Nazjatar.
Nazjatar.
It could be like we got Nazjatar and the Mechanomes in Battle for Azeroth, we could have it as a side realm that we go to. I don't know, but I definitely think that's going to be a place. The thing about Helheim is Helheim is definitely on the agenda because we are fighting with Helya, and she made Helheim. I think the way she made Helheim is of interest to the Jailer, and because it is much, it is a Titan version of what the first ones did when they made the, you know, the Maw. They imprisoned him in the Maw. They made the Maw supposedly inescapable in much the same way that she made the Halls of Valor and Helheim inescapable when she created them. She made pocket dimensions in much the same way. So I think that's why she was of such importance to the Jailer. As for the visions Zekon had, we're going there because that's what the other side is. He was just given a vision by Von Samedi. And he didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and not only that, but like we now know, thanks to the other side, that what Von Samedi does there is he creates, or at least puts them, these souls into their own version of the afterlife. Like when you're going through there and you're dealing with, and again, mild spoilers, but any of those encounters, when you're dealing with Hakkar, you're on a temple that worships Hakkar. When you're dealing with the Mana Storms, you're in a version of Nomragon. That is essentially, you know, their ideal version. So like these are little things that he can create, pocket dimension. So when we see Sarfang in Shadows Rising, when we see that vision, that could be accurate. Like that could be exactly where Sarfang is, but it could just be one of those places that's a pocket dimension, his version of the afterlife. And I think it goes back to the like the Braden Brad thing and everything else, where it's like, not everything has to be, for lack of a better term, general population. Like, not everything has to cross-pollinate. And there's this idea that you see in a lot of real-world, like, mythology and a lot of supernatural sort of, like, thought process when it comes to the whole, you know, where do souls go when they die? Even if you want to look at cheesy TV shows, as much as I love it, I know that some of the stuff is super cheesy, but like, look at the show Supernatural itself. Everything for heaven and hell is personalized. It's like their own version of it. And that's where, like, I think it's really interesting because, like, Sarfang seems to be in one of those places. Braden Brad might be in one of those places. It's,
well, for that matter, too, I'm going to be upfront here. Just because Zekon saw, you know, Sarfang in some kind of paradise, that's more for him than it is for Sarfang.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite possible Sarfang isn't anywhere like that. That's possible. That was a vision for Zekon. It wasn't a vision for Sarfang. Sarfang, whatever he's doing, we don't know. He could be in the Shadowlands. He could have gone to Maldraxxus. He maybe went nowhere. Maybe he just died. We don't know. But I do know he's not in the Maw because we're not currently fighting Sarfang, leader of the Maw. That's a joke. Because Sarfang would have kicked the Jailer's butt and taken over by now.
Probably. That's what we're getting at. Yeah.
But in all sincerity, Cleave Master aside, rest in peace, buddy. I definitely think that some of these places you're mentioning are going to pop up.
I'm on the Thros bandwagon too, especially with dealing with Ardenweald as you advance through the campaign stuff. One of the things that's really fascinating is the Drust are using portals, like magic portals, to teleport into Ardenweald. And it's interesting because Ardenweald, when you're dealing with like the Wild Hunt and the Grove Tenders and everything, they've never seen that before. But when you're dealing with certain other factions, like the Brokers, it's nothing new to them. This is what they do. They can open up portals between lands without the intervention of anybody in Ouroboros. So they're just like, yeah, okay, whatever. I would not be surprised if you're like right on the money and then we just start making a deal with a broker to say, you know what, we need to go there and finish this, open up a portal to Thros. We're going to go kick some weird Wicker Man butt. Like, it's going to happen. Yeah.
And it's actually, there's one of the things that's said is that Thros is actually an outgrowth or a subsidiary of the Emerald Nightmare.
Yeah.
Because Thros was created by druids.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what the Emerald Nightmare was. They weren't in contact with the people back, you know, they weren't in contact with the Cenarion Circle. They were using their own magic in their own way. And we know that the Drust druidic arts are still preserved, and it's very death-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite possible this is like using the shadow. It's using the void as a back door into the Shadowlands. And we've seen that that's happened in other places. We've seen that Bastion's been invaded by the Void directly. So since Thros is called the Blighted Lands, I don't know if it's considered to be a Death Realm or a Void Realm. And it could be both.
Yeah, it could be that intersection between the two.
Yeah, but I definitely think that we've seen everything that the Drust have done has been a perversion of what they were supposed to do. Like that's why the Thornspeakers left the Drust, because the Drust were just perverting everything that they had stood for. Yeah. And there's a lot going on. I definitely think we're going to see Thros this expansion. I definitely think it's going to be a place we go.
And I've been saying this since the beginning, there's an infinite number of possibilities of places that we could go. It's going to depend on where the teams want to take us. I will be very interested to see what new places make an appearance, because I honestly feel we're not just going to be limited to like 4 or 5, maybe 6 realms. There's probably going to be more.
The map looks like that's what they're giving us. I mean, there's a lot of empty space on that map.
There's a ton of empty space. So we'll get to more places, I'm sure of it. And I have trust in Steve and team with the story that they're going to tell, that wherever it's going to be pretty dang. But hopefully that answers your question, Kali. But we're going to move on to our next one here. High Watchers of Lore. Quick question involving wild speculation, or inviting wild speculation. Do you think the Brokers share an origin / history with the Eternals? Eternals. Ethereals. I have Marvel Comics on the brain, sorry. Both seem to be extraworldly, extramortal, beings whose physical form is energy wrapped in more solid matter, perhaps by the same necessity in both cases. And they both share an interest in fantastical commerce and a turning a profit off adventurers. Even their voice effects are similar. Don's tinfoil hat. Cheers, Razorbug. Razorbug. What do you think?
No, I absolutely don't think they are related in any... I think we know the Brokers are, like, from what we know of the Brokers, they come from an unnamed realm of the Shadowlands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I suppose the case could be that they are... Here's the thing. We don't know exactly what happened to the Ethereals. We know that their bodies were destroyed, and they had to use, you know, magical bandages and so forth to maintain their now arcane spirits existing on our world. So here's a possibility. If we want to postulate a Broker's Ethereals relationship, it could very well be that the Brokers are the anima of the Ethereals. When they were sundered by what happened to Karesh, their spirits were split, and part of them went to the Shadowlands, where it couldn't be part of the cycle. It couldn't be judged because it wasn't whole. We know that when someone dies, but they're in a weird case, they're judged as a whole. The various pathways are all considered part of one spirit, and they're judged as that spirit. I don't understand this. It's never made a lot of sense to me, but it's what we've been told. Like, for instance, when our version of the original Gul'dan died, apparently his entire soul, all the versions of Gul'dan that existed, were judged, even though there was another Gul'dan running around. You got me as to how this works. I don't know. Time doesn't really exist there, so people can die at vastly different times, and it doesn't matter, because in the Shadowlands, there is no time. So you're all going to die eventually. You all die eventually. You all get there. That's just what it is. So if the Brokers were split off in that way, and they're, you know, part of them went to the Shadowlands, it might very well have ended up in another realm and not been judged, because they weren't whole. They weren't the whole being. And the rest of them isn't ever going to go to the Shadowlands, because they're now this weird arcane presence that exists in our universe. Like, I've never heard it explained to me whether or not you can actually kill one ethereal. Mm-hmm. Like, if I kill them and their wrappings get ripped open, can they just drift over and find a new body like Wildfire from the old Legion comic books? Like, can they just get a new suit? Like, oh, I got some new wrappings, I'm fine. I don't know the answer to that question. So I don't think the Brokers are supposed to be related to the Ethereals, but if you were going to postulate an origin for them, that's one possibility.
See, and I've been thinking that maybe they're not related to the Ethereals in any capacity other than rivals to the Ethereal. So one of the things I find fascinating is that, like, they occupy a similar space between worlds, because that's what Ethereals were originally sold to us as. We know they have a planet, but they basically are planet walkers, or at least that's what we were told. Like, they walk through, you know, the Twisty Nether, get to different planets, collect arcane items and artifacts, and have transactional relationships. Well, what if it's not just traveling through space, but also traveling through, like, dimensions? Ethereals open up gates very similar to how the brokers do it. We actually help them in many cases in Burning Crusade do exactly that. We help them form a lot of these gates and help them jump in from wherever they're, you know, stationed nowadays. But what if they're not the only race out there that did that? And while the Ethereals were focused mainly on arcane, brokers were always more interested in anima, because that seems to be the case. I would not be surprised if they just happen to be, the big reveal is that brokers aren't dead. They're not necessarily Shadowlands native entities. That they're just there, that they can go there, which is why they can move between the different planes without any extra intervention.
Though, I'm gonna tell you something that I think contradicts what you're saying.
Okay.
The brokers have various symbols on their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Those symbols are also seen in, you know, other places in Ouroboros, which is not a city they made. And they're also seen on other First One artifacts that you find in the Shadowlands, which would imply that the brokers are somehow related to the creation of Ouroboros or the creation of the creation by the First Ones. So it's possible that they're not dead. Like, I think that the not dead thing is interesting. What if they're not necessarily, they were intended for a different purpose?
Yeah, then that's entirely possible too. And it's also entirely possible that's for the Ethereals as well.
Except no, there's not, we know exactly how the Ethereals got the way they got. And it's nothing to do with being created by a higher power. It's the destruction of a void being. I feel like the fact that they're similar is just the fact that you're always going to get some people trying to occupy niches. But I don't think they actually are related. I don't think there's any real evidence of them being related. It's just that they like the same stuff. Goblins like a lot of that same stuff. And we don't ever worry that they're related to Ethereals because we know they're not. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
They're not that similar. I don't think the Ethereals are all that similar either. I don't think that they're contained the same way. I think they're actually, I don't know, artificial is the only word I can think of to describe it. I think they're creations.
Well, I think I'm fine with that, but what I was getting at was I'm wondering if there's an entire series of races that were created for a specific purpose by the First One. Because there's nothing that says that the First Ones didn't have any hand in what happened in the material plane, right? Like, there's nothing that says that they were only limited to the Shadowlands, right? We don't know what they were yet, and we know that for some reason their technology responds to us, and we're not of the Shadowlands, right? There's a lot of things that could really take this for a spin. What if there are other races that are very similar to Ethereals and Brokers, but all of them have a very specific focus? Maybe they were designed or destined to do certain things, like, I don't want to say curation, but what if that tends to be what they were supposed to do, like curate this particular element or curate this particular realm's, you know, X or Y. So I don't know, like, in the, yeah, you may be absolutely right. There could be just that they're just artificial beings that, you know, were created for whatever reason. But I think there might be some relation between them. Might be other races.
Yeah, but the reason that I don't, I mean, maybe you're right, but the reason I'm not going for this is because we know exactly that the Ethereals used to just be physical beings like everybody else. They just used to be fleshy people. And it's Dementius, the All-Devouring's assault on Koresh. And it was their attempt to stop it that caused them to get ripped, like, into, you know, beings of energy as they are. Whereas we have no reason to believe that the brokers were ever anything but what they are. Now, that's the only reason that I don't necessarily see any specific connection to the First Ones or anything. I mean, it's not saying, you know, for all we know, the First Ones made the entire bloody universe.
Yeah, which is everything possible.
We don't know one way or the other. There's nothing to give us that connection right now. I'm not saying it isn't there. I'm not saying you're not right. I'm saying as of right now, I don't see anything that leads to that. You know, it is speculation. Sure. There's nothing in the game right now that's, if anything, the Ethereals and the Brokers are actually very different. And it part isn't just the fact that the brokers are interested in and commanding such a thing about Anima. The Ethereals aren't specifically about Arcane. They don't want it. They're brokers of their own sort, but they're not trying to, you know, they're not trying to get Arcane stuff necessarily. Some of them are into the Void. Some of them are into Revenge. It's a very distinct difference in their society. But, I mean, we could find out differently. It could turn out that they were never fleshy beings. You know, that kind of stuff's happened before.
Entirely possible. But either way, we're going to wind up, I feel almost certain in this, finding out more about the brokers as the expansion moves on, because I think they're going to play an increasingly important role in how we deal with what's happening. Just from interactions with their weekly quests and things like that, where they're sending you to get specific items from specific figures throughout, you know, the Shadowlands. I think it's going, and with everything that's happening with Venari in the Maw, there's going to be some form of climax, some form of like culmination of our dealings with them, I think. So we'll find out more for sure. It's just going to take a matter of time. All right. Our next question comes from Shad, who is a Blood Elf Paladin from Hyjal, U.S. While completing Sojourner of Bastion, I was working through the Spear of Calliope, or Calliope, whatever. I don't know how you pronounce it, which is a fantastic storyline, if only for the quest that is an homage to Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. The spear is the item, a reference to the Spear of Joseph. You have to kneel for the first challenge, and you have to disable traps so an arrogant person can follow you. Before that quest, you can go on a quest, Mark of Humility, during which an NPC tells you that they foresee that a current enemy will become an ally, and that they hope you will have the humility to see the true path. I know this could be referring to anyone, but let's set aside the "it could be anyone" and assume this statement will be resolved this expansion and is someone we have already seen since the expansion launched. Logically, I'm guessing one of four entities: Sylvanas, Helia, Jailer, or one or all of the Forsworn. What are your thoughts? Uther. Go to that one first. Yeah, I was going to say Uther is the logical one.
They even don't kill Uther and you can find him at the end. So I assume it's going to be, but I feel like that's the setup.
I think so too. And I think that's, I don't want to say the most obvious, but it makes the most logical sense, especially with everything that they're building up with Uther and his story, as far as his involvement with Bastion and the Forsworn goes. There's even conversations like as you're going through the Bastion questing and getting like the memories of the Hand of Devotion. I can't remember who she was before she decided to become Forsworn.
Don't choose the Hand of Loyalty.
Hand of Loyalty. Thank you.
Because that's the big clue that Devos is, in fact, not on the up and up.
Yeah. So you have that, and there's comments that are made that, like, you know, he's not going to be truly a Forsworn. He's, you know, unstable and all those other things. Like, they're dropping pretty heavily that Uther's going to swing back around, and I'm not going to be upset when that happens. So. But I think that's pretty much the surefire bet for that. The second question here from Shad is, are the first ones not the head of each of the Shadowlands zones? The impression that I got from the main campaign story is that they are the first ones, and the Jailer is one of them, or have we not met the first ones yet? No, we have not met the first ones yet.
That's definitely not. The ones that you've seen are the Eternals, and they are definitely, they're on the same level as Titans, basically. They're not the first ones. If they were the first ones, the Jailer could presumably use the first one's portal that you used to get out of the Maw. He can't, so clearly it's something beyond him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really think there's anything more deep than that. All right, our next set of questions, and there are three of them here. This is from Redzian, a Night Elf Druid from Kalistraz. So I have two comments and a question. Two comments and a question. One, in a recent Lore Watch, Matt mentioned that Ouroboros reminds him of Babylon 5. I'll go you one further and say that Kasher and Kadelen are named after Sheridan and Delen, and in their annoyed dialogue, Kasher mentions wanting to be left alone, all alone in the night, and Kaden has no desire to babble on. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty on the nose. Two, I have a theory that the skull in the Fatebringer sword is actually the skull of Renault, Alexandros Morgraine's eldest son. It seems fitting, as Renault was the one who betrayed and killed him. And then three, this question has spoilers for Arnwald's story. So during the story, we learn that the Wild Seeds are nurtured with Anima until they are ready to return to their world. We find out that the Wild Seed that bonds to us is Ysera. Does that mean that she was destined to return to Azeroth until the Winter Queen used her dwindling Anima to save her, and thus binding her to Arnwald? Could that mean that the other dragon aspects could go through the same process when they die? So do you want to go first or do you want me to go?
I mean, I don't know. Ysera kind of had a specific relationship to the Emerald Dream and thus to Ardenweald. But I mean, I guess it's theoretically possible. If they haven't already been, you know, sucked dry by the you know, Wild Hunt and the Winter Queen to preserve Ardenweald, then maybe we were going to get Malygos back. I don't know. I've wanted Neltharion to return. Like, I've wanted him to be in this expansion. I've seen no sign of him, and I doubt he will come back, but I definitely wanted that. I think it would be fascinating to see a sane, composed, no longer affected by the old gods Neltharion.
Yeah.
Even if he just appeared in the Shadowlands and he didn't go back to Azeroth, just imagine the conversation he could have with Rathion. There's a lot there I would love to see, but I don't know if could it mean that if the people at Blizzard wanted it to mean that. I don't know. For all we know, in fact, Ysera would have reappeared on the Dragon Isles, and that's how we're going to get the Dragon Isles expansion that we've been talking about forever and ever. Maybe like there's, you know, maybe Neltharion's been reborn there. I don't have an answer to this question. I do think it's possible if the Blizzard wants to do that. I definitely think they've given themselves room to do it if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, and I'm sort of in the same camp. I think they could do that if they so choose to, but I think most of it is that Ysera had sort of a special bond with the Emerald Dream, and as a result was almost being treated like one of the ancients as far as the cycle of rebirth goes. But the distinct impression that I get from doing the Ardenweald stuff during the Covenant is that anybody can go back. It's not just limited to, you know, the ancients and the old gods and the Loas and, you know, supremely powerful beings. It's anyone that the Winter Queen deems worthy of going back, essentially. And I'm starting to take the fact that she bound Ysera in the way that she did as almost like a, I don't want to say like sticking up, you know, two fingers at her sister, but I think it is kind of that sort of like, not nice response to being demanded upon when everything else is going sideways. It's like, okay, I'm going to use what limited anima I have to bring her back, but she's going to be bound here, not going to be sent back to her world like you assumed that she was going to, because otherwise she would have taken her to the conservatory instead of the Grove of Awakening, and you would have had a completely different, you know, set of anything. So could they do this with the other dragon aspects? Probably. The way that it sets up, any spirit that can be put into a wild seed and fed anima and resurrected through that grove, through the conservatory, can and will be sent back to whatever their mortal realm is. I don't think it's limited. So Blizzard has all the wiggle room that they want here. It could be a thing where maybe, what is it, Coralestraz? I think that was the mate of Alexstrasza.
Yes, Coralestraz.
Yeah.
Crassus.
Like, maybe he gets sent back and he's on the Dragon Isles and that's where they come back, because we don't know how... That's the other thing. Like, we don't know when something comes back, where they come back. Like, that has not been explained. Like, we know Loa come back. We know Wild Gods come back, but it's...
We've seen it in case of one.
Yeah.
We saw Cenarius return, and he returned through a portal in Hyjal.
That had to be opened by us.
Yeah. So it's quite possible that there's some places where you can bring them through. I don't, but I think in general, yes, it's possible to go a little bit in about the whole, you know, Renault. I mean, maybe it was his skull, but that would imply that Alexander Smogrin went back to our world and grabbed his kid's skull, which I don't think they're supposed to be able to do. Like, once you're there, you're not supposed to come back. So I don't think so, but you know, it's not that he would, I don't know that he would pause from it. Although, I don't know that he has that kind of animus. He struck his son down, and that's actually interesting because, you know, I just got done saying you're not supposed to be able to come back. But yeah, it's true. Alexandros appears and kills his son. Maybe he brought it back with him. I don't know. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. But yeah, I don't know. Hopefully that answers your question. And I don't know. I think we'll find out more about Alexandros, his role, and how he's got Fatebringer set up as that sort of storyline progresses. So if you have chosen to go to the Bone City, route of your covenant, please report back and let us know, because I'd be curious what you guys run across as your... Our next question comes from Tetsemi. A question for Lorewatch. How similar are the Torn and the Night Elf cultures in regards to Earthmother / Elune worship? Is there a mutual respect there culturally, or are they at odds? I think until they burned the tree, there could have potentially been a respect, but I think that's all gone out the window now.
In terms of culture, in terms of the way their cultures approach these things, Night Elves tend not to really talk about the world or the Earth Mother itself. And to the Torn, Elune is just one of two figures that kind of deal with the Earth Mother as subsidiary units, like the eyes of the Earth Mother. So there's room to talk about it, but they definitely don't view the world in the same way. The Night Elves, because the Night Elves tend to focus on the moon and the night more than they do the world itself, the Earth Mother, which is a more Torn concept. Both are into nature, and there's certainly, like, there's evidence of there being a Torn druidic tradition of sorts well before Malfurion taught Hamul. Like, they at one time they seemed to have their own form of druidism that fell by the wayside because they were. It should be pointed out that they were in contact with Cenarius and his, you know, father, and that they knew them, Malorn and Cenarius. I believe do they call Malorn Aparo, or is that the son?
I don't remember.
I'll have to look up at some point, but they were definitely, the Torn preserve a version of the Cenarius myth. There's room culturally for them to talk, but I definitely think that Joe's correct that, you know, the whole thing where you come to their land and burn it and kill thousands of their people, it's going to be real hard for Torn and Night Elves to come to common cause anytime soon. I would guess Hamul doesn't get many calls back from Malfurion nowadays.
Probably not, no.
The two talk at all, it would probably be very terse. I mean, it's probably fair that Hamul was busy. Like, I don't think Hamul was you know, involved in that attack. I think he was down in Silithus and had no more knowledge of it than anybody else. But nevertheless, I think that Malfurion's current perspective is much more aggressive towards the Horde than it ever was before. So
yeah, and I would agree.
But yeah, I think there's room for them to talk. The Torn tend to say, like, yeah, all that stuff you think is cool, but what about this? And the Elves tend to be, we don't care about that. So yeah, there's room to talk.
If they ever come to peace again. But yeah. So I think we have time for one more question, and this one comes from King Pluto. Question for Lorewatch. So was Odin's eye given to the jailer? And if so, is there a chance that the jailer's giving him sleeper agents in which he has control of already on Azeroth for when he escapes the Maw? The question seems to be implying that sleeper agents are in control by Odin, but no. So we don't know where the eye went. We know that Moizala made the deal. And bargained for the eye. We assume that it was given to the jailer, but it is an assumption right now. We don't know for sure. We know that Moizala does not have it, at least not at the time that we kick his teeth in the other side. Whether the forces that Odin was creating are going to result in potential sleeper agents for the jailer, I don't think the jailer cares about sleeper agents. He doesn't exactly seem... subterfuge-y? He seems pretty
overt. I mean, I will actually say that it's possible that they're being used not in the case of agents that can be activated later to serve his will, but possibly as intelligence gathering. Like, it definitely feels like the deal with Odin was a means to create the Valkyr, and the Valkyr seemed like definitely like they were a means to subvert the Kyrian. And in Helya, like I've said before, I really feel like it's Helya that was the real prize the whole time. It was Helya they were after. They wanted Helya's knowledge. They wanted Helya's gift for creating dimensional barriers and creating pocket dimensions because they wanted a way out of one. Basically, they wanted like a locksmith because they had the world's biggest lock wrapped around them and they needed somebody. If you want to get out of a bad situation, you want to get out of a prison, what's one of the first things they do with prisons and stuff nowadays is they hire experts who are experts at breaking out of things.
Mm-hmm.
And those people get to be experts from breaking out of things by studying those things. Helya is a pretty good example of somebody who's made her own pocket dimensions. She's a good person to look at how to get out of this one. So that's my theory about what Moizala was after. I don't think, however, I think it's possible that Odin's eye is being used to spy into our world.
And
quite
I agree.
Possibly looking through Odin himself, or the things, any of the Valkyr that Odin creates,
or any of the Valjar.
Yeah, maybe we don't know.
Yeah, I'm on that same side though too. I think that that's the most likely thing, is that it's Odin's eye that allows the jailer to look into our world from his prison, and I almost like the Palantir type thing. I would not be surprised if we get to a point inside of whatever raid or level of Torghast we go into to start punching the jailer that we see an encounter that revolves around that, or shows us some things that we're seeing through that eye, because it gives me that sort of vibe that it's like, yeah, I can see what's going on with using this item that happens to be a piece of a Titanic watch, or a Titanic custodian, essentially. Sure, why not? It makes perfect sense, especially if you consider that I think it would be treated like a soulbound item, like a soulbound item, or soul linked item, where of course it's part of a living creature. Why can't you use it to sort of spy or divine what they have access to? You know, I think we actually might have time for one more, so let's see if we can get this in. This is from Spoody. Lore Watch or Blizzard Watch question. In the quest Working for a Living, in Maldraxxus, you use a broker portal to go to a different world to capture a creature. This world is the same map used in Invasion Point Arnor. Do you think that this is a sign that we may see more of the Legion Invasion world in the future? Thanks for all that you do. Have been a listener since the olden days. Spoody, the Gnome Mage from Elden.
I mean, it might be, or it might just be them reusing something they had so they didn't have to design a whole new world just for one quest. But yeah, that's me being cynical. It is certainly possible we might see those worlds again. I mean, we know that there are other worlds that the Shadowlands connects to, so it's possible.
I honestly hope that that's something we see a little bit more of. Personally, I'd love to see more worlds in which the Shadowlands touch and sort of start weaving things together a little bit, because I think it would give a little more, I don't want to say solidity, but a little more connection to like what the Legion was doing with these worlds that they didn't destroy. Because we know the Legion visited countless worlds and that they destroyed them or purged them of all life or burned them to the ground. But these worlds that we go to, there's still life there. The Legion's still present there. Why? What were they using it for? Was it just to, you know, make another demon engine or an engine of souls or whatever? Or was there a particular reason? Is it because we know that the Legion probably at one point would have wanted to get into the Shadowlands? There's a lot of power there. If the Void wanted to go there, the Legion very clearly would want to go there to find out what the Void wanted. So even if nothing more than to deny them that sort of that whatever power or whatever they're looking, since ultimately the Legion's goal was to destroy the Void. So there could be something there. And I'd like to see maybe a little bit more about that. Were these worlds kept Legion habitable for a reason? Is it because they were closer to that sort of thinning veil between our universe and the Shadowlands? Was it all part of that process? So maybe, of course, it could also be the cynical thing that Matt said, where it's like, nah, we just want to reuse this map. It's easier than making a whole new map. Entirely possible, but I hope it spins off into something a little more important. I think that would be very, very, very cool. But I think that's all we're going to have time for today. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And again, if you have any questions for the podcast, be sure to send them in to any of our Discord channels. Patrons do get first billing. And if you don't want to use Discord, be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. And again, thank you for your continued support. Without you, our listeners, we wouldn't be able to make this content, which I'm very grateful that we. But without further ado, we'll let you go, and we'll see you guys next week.
Dolphins on Spees.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
Kayla Itzinis. I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.